Hello and welcome to another rousing edition of Trending Topics with BB. I am your humble host, Brooke Brown. Well, we've made it to the milestone episode of 170, and I couldn't think of a better episode to drop. But before I introduce my guests on this wonderful episode, I do want to remind you of the housekeeping, as I have said many of the episodes in the past. But please log on to the official website, which is TrendingTopicsWithBBPodcast.com. There, find everything you need to know about this podcast, including the new episodes, the social media channels, and any updates concerning this podcast. And if you are a listener on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please leave a favorable rating. It helps this podcast be found by other listeners such as yourself, and I appreciate you doing that. And if you're new, welcome to this podcast. Thank you for joining, and I hope you like what you hear and check out all of the previous episodes that have led to this milestone episode. So, before I introduce my guest, I do want to provide another disclaimer. This episode was recorded this past January 2024 on the Groove Cruise, and as you will hear, my voice was pretty much gone. We recorded this by day two, but I was having such a fun time that my voice is pretty gone, and you will hear that. So I will do my best to edit this so you can hear this, but you may or may not have to turn up the volume in your speakers or your earphones or wherever you're listening to this podcast episode to be able to hear our conversation, particularly on my end. I apologize, but that's how it happened. So my guest is one half of Gabriel and Dresden, Mr. Dave Dresden. This has been a long time coming. I appreciate him sitting down and taking the time with me on the Groove Cruise to record this episode. But without further ado, I want to get into the episode. So please enjoy this lovely episode featuring Dave Dresden.
Cool.
All right.
Well, welcome, Dave, to my podcast.
Thank you for having
appreciate,
me.
Well, my voice is going, but yep. Well.
Same.
All right. Well, finally, we made this happen. I'm glad to be on this beautiful Groove Cruise with you. Your set was amazing last night.
Thank you.
But first, what I want to start with is kind of the background and, like, back in the days when you were doing, like, motorcycle and jazz, and the fact that the other night when you played As the Rush Comes, everybody just, every time you've played that. So, what I want to talk about is, like, in trance and how you've been in this business for a while, in the evolution, and kind of go with where you see yourself from when you started to how it's going now, and kind of just talk a little bit about your background and...
All right, my background was DJing, and I started in the late 80s on vinyl, and then I hated carrying vinyl. So instead I started mixing on CDs. I was probably one of the first people to play all CDs in a club, and I got a lot of ridicule for this because everybody was still on vinyl, and like they called me, "He's not a real DJ," you know.
Because of the vinyl, yeah.
Yes. So, but I just liked them more, and then it allowed me to be more creative because you could burn CDs of anything. Like you could work on a track, and then put it on a CD and play it that night, which was like next to impossible back then. That sort of allowed me to be more creative in the DJ booth. I was utilizing the new technology to the best of its ability. And that gave me a little bit of a belief that I could be a record producer. But I tried it out. I had a friend who had a studio with all the gear. And he did all the engineering, and I just sort of told him what I wanted. And it took, like, so many days.
Right.
Like, weeks. And I was like, I don't know if I have the patience for this.
Right. You're like, that's a lot to carry.
Yeah. And I have, you know, I have attention deficit disorder or whatever, you know. So I was like, I'll just be a DJ. I'm really good at it. I enjoy it. And it fulfills me. But I bought all the dance magazines from Europe. And I saw the lineups of the big festivals and clubs and this whole world of dance music that didn't exist in America. And I was like, man, I want to be a part of that.
Right.
Oh my God, I want to be a part of that. And I would like, I remember, because I was also a writer in the 90s too. And the PR company sent me a recording of Paul Oakenfold at Cream.
Oh.
And yeah. It was the first DJ live mix I had ever heard that was live, like,
right.
with microphones. And I heard the crowd screaming, like, during the breakdowns, and that didn't happen.
Right.
And I actually got sad thinking that I missed out on that. And so I moved to California in 2000. I started out in Connecticut.
Okay.
It's a long answer, by the way.
That's people want the story. So.
Uh-huh. So when I moved to California, I was like small fish in a big pond. Nobody wanted to book me. I had no reputation. And I was like, if I ever want to DJ again, I'm probably going to have to learn how to make music. And lo and behold, I met Josh Gabriel.
That's what I was going to ask. When did that happen?
That happened in 2001. Well, see, these are long stories. These are all like
different. I love it.
So in 2001, I moved out to LA to be the music director of an online radio station, which was like way ahead of its time, mm-hmm. conceptually. So it had funding. So it was like, it could exist for a while, but it wasn't really a business model back then. Online radio. It was online dance music radio.
I remember being on AOL dance music radio.
Yeah, huh?
And just listening to that for days.
Yes.
Until they got rid of it.
This is kind of what GrooveRadio.com was.
Yeah.
It was we just played like a top 40 rotation of dance music. So, like, a drum and bass song might be in there, a down-tempo track might be in there, a house music track. You know, we played Sandstorm before it was ever a hit, you know, all these types of things. And it did well for what it was at the time, but because of where we were, we got all these DJs to come in. And, like, the person who was the program director was well-known in the music industry. His name is Swedish Eagle.
I've heard the name.
E-G-I-L.
Okay.
Spell it out for you, Susan. And so Swedish Eagle knew everybody. And so when somebody came to town, he would ask them to come out to the studio to do a live mix and be on camera. Because we had a webcam and everything.
Awesome.
So Pete Tong came down one day. And Pete Tong was like my driving force. Like, he was my number one inspiration, because I just loved that he had the power to find great music, sign great music, play it on the radio, and break it in the UK. It was my dream gig to be like a DJ of that.
Was he on BBC? He was on BBC
yes,
Radio still?
Uh-huh, okay. Yes, uh-huh. And this was like the salad days of the Essential Selection,
okay.
which was his show. I think it's still on, but it might be called something else now, but... He's still on the radio. So anyway, he came into the studio, and after his mix, Eagle interviewed him. I mean, it was literally like royalty showing up, you know what I mean? We were all like kind of in awe of Pete Tong being there.
Right.
And so Eagle asked Pete, what are your three hot new tracks that you think are going to be future hits? And so he's like, plays one, then he plays another, and then he pulls out this vinyl record that's just a white label. And he plays it, and he's like, oh, I don't know what this is, Roy. I just played it the other night in Seattle, and the DJ before me played it, and I liked it so much, I asked her if I could have the record. And so I knew what it was, because I was, like, deep into Napster back then, like... Trying to find.
I remember LimeWire too.
Yes, trying to find new music, and so I politely waited until the end of the show when he was done and he was like shaking hands. I was like, hey, you know that last record? That's Chocolate Puma. I Want to Be You. And
classic.
And he's like, how do you know that? I was like, I'm a music collector, you know. And he's like, well, you have any other hot tips for me? And I was like, well, how long are you staying? He's like, I'll be here for a little bit. So I burned him a CD of, like, my favorite new recent tracks. And I put my phone number on, my email address, and lo and behold, the guy calls me the next day, and he says, mate, these tracks are awesome. You have really good taste. Would you like to help me find American artists for Essential Recordings? Yeah.
Of course, you're like, yes.
Yeah. Where do I sign up? Yeah. So, like a month or two later, I went to Miami. It was called Winter Music Conference then.
I went in 2019, so yeah. Uh-huh.
So this is 2001. Okay. And so, and Pete asked me, he's like, do you have a cell phone? And I'm like, no. He's like, you need to get one. Oh, he said, do you have a mobile?
Mobile.
Yeah, you need to get one. Because when you hear something in Miami, I need to know about it. Or if you happen to run into an artist, you know, let me know.
Right.
So I met Josh Gabriel independently that year at a party that was being held. It was actually being thrown by a club in LA called Giant and GrooveRadio.com. It was like a collaborative event.
Nice.
And so I met Josh Gabriel in the lobby. I forgot my room key or something. And so I was just down there like trying to get a room key. And I just started talking to Josh, who told me he was there for his software company. And I was like, oh yeah, I know about that thing. And he's like, yeah, really? How'd you find out? I'm a nerd, you know?
Right.
And so the next day, there's a party on the rooftop of that building, and like a bunch of hot DJs from the time, like Nick Warren was there, and,
nice.
And there was another guy, Leon Alexander.
Okay.
So Leon Alexander was DJing, and he was playing Days Go By when it was a brand new song. It was actually by the Hydrogen Rockers before.
Okay.
They renamed themselves Dirty Vegas.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that single.
Uh huh.
And then everybody's like, oh, no, that's Dirty. Later, they're like, no, that's Dirty Vegas. You're uh-huh. like, that makes sense.
So he's playing, and he's playing Days Go By, and Josh is like, man, this is such a good song. And I'm like, yeah, I heard it yesterday, too. And so he reaches into his bag, and he pulls out a record, right? And then he goes and hands it. He just walked away, and he hands it to Leon Alexander, like a few feet away. And I'm like, what'd you just give him?
Right.
He's like, oh, that's my first 12 inch pressing. I pressed it myself. And I was like, can I have one? Like, and I said to him, I didn't like, can I have one? I said, hey, I'm a scout for Pete Tong. Can I have one too? You know, in the chance I like it, you know, I'll give it to him.
Right.
Right? And so he's like, yeah, sure you work for Pete Tong, right? You know, like, you know, joking in that. He wasn't like, they call me a liar or anything. He's just like, no, really. And so I was like, by chance, do you also have a CD so I could listen to it in my room? Because I had a CD Walkman.
Okay.
And he's like, yeah. So he pulls out a CD. And gives it to me, the CD. And I was like, hang tight. I'm going to go listen to it right now.
Right.
So I went to my room. I put it in the Discman. And I put my headphones on. And, you know, I was expecting it to be total garbage. Not total garbage, but, you know, you never hear... You never just meet somebody randomly and they hand you a track and it's, like, next level.
Well, it's meant to
right?
be.
Right? And so I'm listening to it and I'm, like, wanting to hate it. I'm wanting to be bored. And I'm like...
Yeah, vibing.
Totally vibing, and like, and I ran back downstairs. I'm like, dude, you made a hit track. That's a hit track. And I'm like, I love that sample. OMD, a band called Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark from the 80s.
Okay.
So he's like, man, you know OMD? And so he's like, this guy must know his shit.
Right.
So I called Pete Tong. And I told him, hey, I have a record for you. And he's like, oh, bring it by the Delano, you know. And so I went by the Delano, gave him the record. And I'm like, this is really good. It's like Deep Dish, but better.
Mm.
Right?
Right.
And he's like, you know, when you say something, he better goddamn be good, you know, because he's not going to be like, what's this guy on, you know.
Yeah.
So he loved it. I gave him the CD, too. And he listened to it, and he called me back, and he's like, "Yeah, this is really good. In fact, it's so good, I want to put it on my new compilation."
Wow.
And then, so, you know, he had to talk to Josh. I gave him Josh's phone number, and so Josh was just like instantly my friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And he's like.
Not for, you know, I mean, like, I did him a solid, like, by accident.
Right.
And so he's, like, sending me all his, you know, every week or two I get a CD of productions he's been working on. And, like, you know, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? Do you think Pete would like this? Just a lot of questions. And I'd be like, well, you know, if you added some music to this part right here at 3 minutes and 14 seconds... I think it would greatly improve that moment. Like, it needs more chords or something. Like, I gave him, like very detailed feedback. And he's like, you know, one day we should mess around with something in the studio. Because you seem to know what you're talking about. And I'd love to have your perspective from as a DJ. Because Josh wasn't really a DJ. He could DJ, but he wasn't a DJ by trade. And I'm a DJ by trade, so... He liked the DJ perspective that I was giving him from the music that he was sending me.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, I feel like he was being a lot more open-minded than a lot of other people would be to somebody who wasn't a proper musician as a collaborator.
But you liked the music and
he
could see the passion in you.
Uh-huh.
So
GrooveRadio.com, like, it got bought out by Clear Channel in summer of 2001. I was out of a job. And I'm like, great, I moved to the West Coast, and my job is gone. What am I going to do? So, I call Pete, and I'm like, hey, you know, is there a way that you can find a budget for me? Because I just lost my job. And he's like, I might not be able to do that, but how about this? How about I'll give you the parts of a New Order song, and you remix it, and if I like it, I'll put it out and I'll give you £5,000, which was a low fee back then.
Okay. I didn't know if that was good or bad.
Yeah, that was low back then. Like, okay. Remixers, you know, were getting $10,000-$20,000 for a remix. And so I was like, what am I going to do? So I called Josh and I said, hey, you know, I got the parts to a New Order song. You want to do it with me? And he's like, fuck yeah, I do. And so that next day I drove up to San Francisco from LA and we started on it. And then the day after that was 9/11. And
wait, the day after was 9/11?
Yes, the day after the first day we started was 9/11.
Wow.
Yes.
And so,
I mean, you know, 9/11 and like March, whatever, 2020, March 13th, they're very similar in a lot of ways because it's like, what's happening? Where are we going? Am I going to die? You know, all this. And so I feel like, you know, Josh had just quit his tech job to pursue music, and I'm out of a job. But I have Pete Tong in my back pocket. So, not in my back pocket.
Just as a resource.
I have his ear. And, yeah. You know, so I think that made Josh and I work a little bit more serious on the music. Like, there was nothing else you could do. It's just, but work on the music. You know, the weeks after 9/11 were just so insanely crazy.
I mean...
And so anyway, we did the New Order remix. Pete loved it, played it on Essential Selection. And back then, if you got played on the Essential Selection, everybody saw it, you know? And so, because it was in all, you know, his playlists were in all the DJ magazines.
Right.
So, just the industry saw it. And so then that got us a remix for Tiesto and one for Way Out West. And then it just really splintered from there. And so, like, by, like, our fifth or sixth remix, we were like, I guess Gabriel and Dresden is the thing, you know?
Right. When did you guys meet Jess?
About the next summer, I had been driving up to San Francisco to work with Josh pretty much weekly. And then I would go home on the weekends. And so as I was driving home on Friday evening, always, I would just check in with all my LA friends. What's going on? And so my friend was like, oh, D-Fuse is playing at Arena. You should come. And so I did. And there was this smoking hot, sexy girl in the DJ booth hanging out. And I just, I don't know, we just started talking, right? And I was like really, really attracted to her. She's right. Hot. And, but I could tell by her speaking voice that she had a good singing voice. And she told me she was a singer. And, you know, in LA, everybody's singer. A singer.
Or yeah. Something.
So I'm just like, yeah, whatever. When can I take you home, you know?
Right.
I wasn't creepy like that.
But
yeah. I was thinking that.
Yeah.
Moment, right? So I got her number, right? And I didn't know if it was for you know, to take her out or to get hear her demo. I was like, yeah, I'd love to hear your demo, you know? So I called her, like, probably 2 days afterwards. And I was like, hey, I'd like to hear your music. So she's like, okay, meet me at this coffee shop on Sunset and blah, blah, blah. And I showed up there, and she was there with her manager. I was like, not a hookup.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to take this seriously. I'm going to listen to her demo and not try to flirt with her. And I went in my car after the meeting, and I listened to it, and I was like, holy shit, she's good. And one of the songs on that demo was a song called Ghost.
Okay.
I hear you calling me when I'm alone.
Yeah, I remember that track.
Calling me. And I'm just like,
where did this come from?
Just blown away.
Yeah.
Just blown away. Like, but how good it was. And like, it was well written, and it was catchy, it had a chorus that was memorable. It was like, the verses supported the chorus. I was just blown away. I just could not stop listening to it. And I called Josh, and I was like, dude, you'll never believe it. I met this girl last night who can totally sing. Listen to this. And I played him on the phone her voice. And he's like, yeah, she's good. Let's get her up. Let's get her up to San Francisco. And so I called her back, and I was like, I listened to your demo. Oh, my God. Ghost is a jam. Holy shit. Like, and she's like, well, why don't I write a new one for you? And so I gave her this track we were working on called Dub Horizon. And it ended up being released. And she's like, cool, I like it. Let me play around with it and see what happens. And so, like, 2 days later, she calls me, and she's like, I sang right over the track. You want to hear it? Meet me at the coffee shop, you know?
Right.
And so she handed me the CD. We went in my car and listened to it, and it was Imagination. No, it's like a dream from near far, moving forward fast. That song, right? And I'm like, you are like the most incredible songwriter I've ever fucking heard and seen. Like you just wrote that. Your song Ghost is incredible. Like, the other songs on your demo are awesome too. Like, so I immediately called Josh as soon as our meeting was over. I'm like, dude, she wrote a hit song to Dub Horizon. So he I think by that time we were like emailing MP3s or something.
So
yeah.
Switched.
Yeah. And so he listened to it, and he's like, yeah, yeah. And Josh is, like, impossible to please when it comes to vocals and songwriting. And he was in, he changed, like, two words from her song. But he was just like, yeah, this is good. So I was like, all right, when are we getting you up? She came up, like, the week or two later, like, and we just wanted to record that song. Get that song done and recorded, and then we could, you know, finish it. So then we just really got on with her well in the beginning. And so we recorded that, and then we wrote another song, and then we did a cover version of a Psychedelic Furs song. And then we did one more song, A Deep Breath Love. And we were feeling really good about that. And so we sort of like, it was like Saturday afternoon. She was with us for like 2 or 3 days, and we wrote and recorded all those songs. So we like went for Middle Eastern food that night. And we ended early and chilled out and went to for Middle Eastern food. And we were like, you know, what if we try for one more? Tomorrow. Before your flight. She's like, I'm down. So we went down to the studio. And Josh, you know, had a little... Remember they used to have Mac stickies? They looked like sticky notes?
Yeah.
And so he had all these sticky notes on his notes
like just app.
Yeah, all stickies. Yeah, you could place them on the screen where we wanted. So he had these words written down on his sticky notes when he opened it. And it was, traveling somewhere, could be anywhere. There's a coldness in the air, but I don't care. And I was like, that's really good. Why don't we use that? Right? And he's like, yeah, I wrote it about Lisa Kay got in a car accident 2 weeks ago. Or that's what inspired it.
Right.
So we actually recorded the vocals as they were written. So we got the verse down. Like, traveling somewhere, could be anywhere. So, and it took a while to get just to sing it the way we wanted. She was singing it a different way. And like, we were just like, no, you need to channel more Dave Gahan, you know, like. And so, then I reminded Josh about these other words that he had written called, it was Embrace Me, Surround Me as the Rush Comes. It was also in a sticky note somewhere, but I remembered this because I will always love that line. And I was like, dude, I think that the Embrace Me, Surround Me as the Rush Comes would work with this as a chorus. And so while he was trying to figure out how to make that work as a chorus, like come up with the vocal melody, I just literally spit out, we drift deeper into the sound and life goes on.
Yeah.
Oh, we drift deeper in that whole thing. I literally wrote that down. Don't even know where it came from. And Josh was like, that's really good. So we recorded that and then got her to the airport. And I was like, holy shit. I always knew that song was special. Like, from literally the moment it was recorded. I don't know what I'm getting.
Yeah, I mean, because it takes you back. It's okay.
Anyway.
Well, what I want to say is that it's one of my favorite tracks. And every time it comes on or a friend references you guys, everybody always just goes, As the Rush Comes. Mm-hmm. As the Rush Comes.
Right.
And no matter if you guys remix it or it's the original, I feel like the community, as you saw last night, embraces it no matter what form it's in.
Right. Well, because it's a song about celebrating letting go. And I think that's what people identify with it. And it's also catchy as fuck.
So. Yeah. That helps.
And, you know, like, we really tried to make Motorcycle an act. In hindsight, it was a horrible business decision because it should have been Gabriel and Dresden featuring Jess. Because we'd be way bigger as an artist if it said Gabriel and Dresden featuring Jess. But we believed that Jess could be an artist that we produce, you know? Like Motorcycle, we're just kind of two dumb dudes in the background, but she's the star, you know?
So, but as we're talking about this, I have the music video playing in my head because I've watched that many times. And whether it's Motorcycle or you guys, it's synonymous with your body of work.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I hear one of the most frequent things I hear from people is, dude, I didn't know you were a motorcycle.
That's true.
So, you know, people think we just remixed it because we made two versions. We made a 129 beats per minute kind of Planet Funk style track. It was very inspired by Planet Funk.
Okay.
And that was the one I loved. I loved that one. And that was the original. That's what we produced from the vocals that we recorded. And Josh was always like, it's not quite right. So I'm like, dude, you're wrong. It's fucking amazing, right? And so he started on the Sweeping Strings mix as an experiment. Because he had just gone and seen Tiesto the night before. Oh, okay. Tiesto was playing a lot of techno. And so Josh was like really into the hard kicks and the hard, you know, the driving bass lines. And so he just wanted to like kind of like just be inspired by what he had just heard. So he took the vocals and stretched them up to 135 beats per minute. And he called it As the Rush Techno. And sent it to me. And he wouldn't send it to me until he was good and ready to send it to me. Right? And I'm like, okay, fine, you know? Because for me, we already had the version, you know? And so when he finally sent it to me, I was like a little bit like, where are we going with this? Where's the chorus? The chorus takes 7 minutes to get to the chorus. That's weird.
It is a long.
It's weird. But it, like, I was like, you know what? I think all we need is some beautiful strings at the end. And he pulls up a patch on the synthesizer called Sweeping Strings. And so I was like, that's exactly what we need, right?
Yeah. Just adds that much, yeah.
And then I was just like done with the other version. Like, that was the version. As the Rush Techno. And, yeah.
Well,
that's the version that became the version.
That became the version.
Yes.
When did so then you switched the track name to As the Rush Comes, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, it was just our working title, As the Rush Techno.
Well, what I want to talk to you about and get your perspective is genres, because for now there's debates.
I know.
And
there always will be debates.
I know. But what gets me, especially in this day and age, is how people are afraid of the word trance. And a lot of, you know, no matter who, I just started a podcast with Sam Devine.
Uh huh.
And she said she was a transid.
Yeah.
First.
Everybody was.
Yeah. Why do you think there's this, like, turnabout?
I think that what happened with trance is that the innovators are the innovators, you know, Paul Van Dyke, Ferry Corsten, Rank One, Jam and Spoon.
Right.
Those guys invented it, and a lot of people took it, but they didn't have that. There's an X factor to those producers' music, and I think that people just started trying to make music for the Beatport chart because they saw careers breaking on Beatport. And so it was almost like, and no disrespect to anybody who makes trance, because if you can write a song and produce it and release it, hats off to you. But like, you listen to like these older records, Cosmic Gate, their early music, Du Monde. These records are just like, they're what defined the music.
Right.
And, but like, nobody's taking it in the trance genre. People were getting too cheesy. And then big room EDM kind of, you know, in a lot of ways, like Deadmau5 music was kind of trancey.
Yeah.
And like, even like the Swedish House Mafia, all that stuff, you know, it has elements of trance in it.
Right.
But, you know, the innovation in trance stopped. And so trance became kind of a bad word because it was just, well, first of all, it dominated for so long that everybody who wasn't trans was just like, fucking thank God, it's not the dominant sound anymore. Like, right. We can get booked, you know?
Right.
And for years, no house music was happening on a level. So, I think that after big room EDM, it's like deep house was what everybody needed. And so that's the opposite of trance. And so, you know, because I think that, like, you know, the group of people that came into dance music with DEADMAU5 and Swedish House Mafia and Nicky Romero and all that, Avicii, they were growing up and their tastes were, you know, maturing. And so, you know, it felt like the logical progression would be trance, but the music was not innovating. And so house music was what became successful after big room EDM. And I think that that's really where trance sort of fell out of favor with people. And, like, you know, the cool kids, like Pete Tong, they didn't like trance. The cool kids didn't like it. Even if they had liked it, they didn't like it anymore or wouldn't admit it. And so trance really has kind of come back around through techno, I feel like. And, I mean, in recent times, techno has gotten a lot darker and harder, I feel like. But, like, there was, like, a couple years where, like, you couldn't tell the difference between trance and techno, to me.
Well, recently, in the last 4 or 5 years, when you listen to techno sets, they play more trance.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel some trance sets are...
You know, a lot of those records in the 90s, because there wasn't a trance section... And they came from Germany, so everybody just assumed it was techno. And so, like, back then, like, everybody was playing Age of Love and Binary Finery and, like...
Goriella.
Yeah, Goriella, maybe to a lesser degree. Like, Ferry Corsten's productions, you know, there were, like, the Sasha and Digweed progressive trance types. And then, you know, when Ferry Corsten came out, I feel like that sort of divided the Sasha and Digweed progressive trance from this other genre of trance. And that's, I think Ferry Corsten's the dude that really blew trance wide open.
Especially with all his different aliases.
Yes, well, just the productions. They were just all so goddamn good.
Right. Well, now I kind of want to fast forward in recent years, because during the pandemic, Club Quarantine was born.
Uh-huh.
And what has that done for you and Josh in terms of Gabriel and Dresden as a whole, and how you saw last night people were wearing plant t-shirts and there's all kinds of...
I mean, it first of all, 2020 was my favorite year ever. Okay?
Despite the circumstances.
Despite the circumstances, despite the unrest. I mean, it all made me feel like what I was doing was important. And that's what motivated me. Like, just knowing how everybody was... I mean, I was struggling, you know, like, all the unrest and all the, like, you know, people fighting over masks and, like, Fauci bad, you know, all that bullshit.
Yeah.
That was bad, but, like, just being able to, like, literally go into my living room, press start, and play music for thousands of people. I was like, I don't ever want this to end. And what did it do? I mean, it did a lot of great things for us. I mean, it definitely got us a lot more fans. People learned about our music that had never heard of us. It also, I feel like, made us a little bit more important in the Anjuna world. Like, people who thought maybe we were too deep, they now got it. They now understood. Like, I didn't really understand or like G&D until the stream. So it was like, there was that. You know, the one thing that really wasn't good is that it took up so much time that we did not make any music in 2020, 2021, and most of, really part of 2022. Because, I mean, I never had any time. I actually went weeks without talking to Josh, except for stream days.
Yeah, that's a little much.
Yeah, so, So it like definitely set us backwards in like, you know, everybody when COVID was over, everybody was out of the gate with all their new jams, like, you know, one record a month they're releasing. And like that's what the Spotify algorithm needs now. You have to release songs every once a month now to like get your algorithm going. Because the more music you release, the more they're willing to put your shit into like
playlists.
Editorial playlists and like even just like recommendations and all kinds of stuff. And so we're definitely behind the eight ball on that. But you know, like I played the Groove Cruise in 2014 and was pretty much anonymous the entire time. And like I got recognized a couple of times, not very often. And like here it's just like it feels like these are all my friends and like everybody's aware of who I am and who we are and what we do. So
definitely.
So having a video, you know, podcast really has definitely helped in a lot of ways.
And it helps. It's on a platform that people
use.
Yeah, and also the perks of being a creator on there is obviously people subscribe to you guys and donate and
keep
it afloat, you know.
Yeah, and I mean that. I actually wasn't the reason why I picked Twitch. I didn't even know. I had no idea anything about that platform when I signed up, and because I was wanting to stream on Facebook just because we had 135,000 followers.
Yeah. And it's Facebook.
But, I'm just like, that's where everybody is. But Facebook doesn't like people playing copyrighted music on their platform. So Twitch, they don't mind it.
So, to an extent.
Yeah, to an extent. Well, they'll cut the songs out of your video on demand.
Right. Well, you know, we're talking on Cruise, but like, moving, I know you guys, you said you're a little behind on music, but you're working on it now, man.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Are you guys doing another album, or are you doing...
Well, we're finishing this EP. It's crazy, we've been working on this EP for a year.
Okay.
Not every day.
Right.
And because also, I mean, we did a lot of touring last year, so... that definitely cuts into music making time. Although having Josh not on the road definitely helps to keep music flowing. But, you know, we need to collaborate. It's like, because there's, things get lost in translation if you don't work together. And so, we're doing good. It's just, we got to get this EP done and then we're going to like, we're starting to, we always have to be, like, toying with where are we going next, you know?
Right.
And so, like, I've been making a mood board of, like, music that I would like to be inspired by, whether it be new, old, you know, just things.
Right.
And so I definitely feel like we love deep, progressive house, melodic, not the bum 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 bum, but like, you know, beautiful music, and like there's definitely a home for it if we could make it on a good label. So I feel like that's what we're gonna do next, is something more deep, something more, dare I say, Tin Liquor-ish.
But I like Tin Liquor,
you know, music that's emotional but slower. Yeah. Like Angina Deep music, basically.
Right.
But with our own style added in.
Distinct sound.
Distinct sound, yes.
Yeah.
So, but we're not there yet. We're finishing the EP. We're, like, literally almost done. Like, I think, like, one or two more days, and I think we're good.
Wow. That's awesome. So, what do you... Like, I know you've taken some time off recently of just... You know, you love the nature.
This has been, the last 6 months of my life has sort of been like overcoming burnout while not taking off. But just like trying to make time for myself, because the live stream and all that definitely led to burnout. Right. And like, I mean, there was, you know, some problems in my personal life too, and just not feeling like you're enough in the music industry, and just flying all over the place. I mean, I was doing streams, I was flying, working with Josh, just taking care of my family, and like, I just was like, I got to my wit's end, really. If I had hair, I would have pulled it out. But I didn't, I kept saying, I want to take a year off.
Right.
I want to take a year off. But I feel like at my age, taking a year off is suicide. Because
I can see how you feel that way, but...
Uh-huh. It would be amazing.
I'm a proponent for mental health, so...
Okay.
If you need to do it, you need to do it.
Right.
You know?
I mean, it's possible.
Because I've even taken time off...
Probably a month.
From the podcast.
Uh-huh, right, uh-huh.
For that same reason.
Right, uh-huh.
Because of other stuff. And now I'm getting back into it, but I can understand.
Yeah. It's... Well, the live stream... It wasn't... You know, I didn't just plug a memory stick in and... I was doing a new music show every Friday.
I know.
4 hours of new music.
I would tune into Techno Tuesdays.
Uh-huh.
New Music Friday, and then you would do like pop-up streams, and I was like, you're always on.
Right. Because I actually fiended for it. I loved it so much. And, well, there was another thing that happened too I can't really talk about.
That's
some people that I was working with that we had to let go. But, but yeah, I feel like I'm like kind of like a flower about to bud again, you know?
Well, that's good.
Like all, I just, like, I went to one national park and I'm like, I'd leave and I'd be like, that was amazing. And then I'd like, I need to do it again. And so like, what I would do is I would tack an extra 2 days onto any gig I was doing and go to some national park near it. I'd rent a car and like, it was actually a really fun way of doing touring. Was like to not just leave and go to the next city, but to like do the show and then just get up the next morning and go hiking sober, I wasn't drinking, you know, because normally I would just get wasted at shows and wake up the next morning feeling like
ugh. Oh yeah.
But no, I was like not drinking and really taking time to like give myself the space that I needed, and it's just the beauty. Just being out there in, like, nature, it's just... I don't even know how to describe it.
Well, I mean, when Remedy came out,
uh-huh.
And you guys had that pine cone, I was like, nice. Nice.
Yeah, Josh and I connected over our love of nature and the patterns that nature creates. That's what Organized Nature was all about, our record label.
One last question is when... Cosmic Gate remixed your guys' track a few years ago,
uh-huh.
And it was Grammy nominated. What did you think about that? Like, it's now in the Academy. Like,
it was amazing. Like, it was nice to be recognized because that album meant so much to me.
Yeah, it's catharsis, right?
Well, there was. I mean, I could. I've actually given this story on the stream.
I know. I'm just...
No. The Only Road, the album that came out in 2017, was like... It should have never happened. Like, you know, Josh and I broke up in 2008. And, like, I definitely got to a point where I had a drug problem. And it's not why we broke up, but it was a contributing factor. But I had a drug problem and it was bad. And there came a point where I was like, I could continue on this path and die, or I could choose life.
Right.
And I was like, I want life. I want to be successful again. I want to make music that makes people feel good again. And I want to get back together with Josh Gabriel because the magic isn't there with anybody else I work with. I can't make the music that we make on my own. Like, it was just like, how do you fill those shoes, right? And I was like, I reached out to Josh And I said, I think we should just talk. Because the magic is in you and me. And at first he wasn't really that interested because a lot of things went down, a lot of things were said. There was a lot of hurt feelings. And, but like, I missed my buddy. I missed, he was my homie for every day for like 8 years, you know?
Right.
And then like, it's just like a marriage, you know? When it breaks up, you're like, what do I do now? And like, I got myself off the drugs, and then I reached out to Josh. I was definitely not gonna. I wanted him to know that I was good. So I went over to Amsterdam. That's where he moved to Amsterdam after we broke up.
Okay.
So I flew over to Amsterdam to meet up with him, and just catch up. And I don't know how, but. Armada heard about this, and they invited us over to the Armada offices to talk. And so the head of Armada, Michael Perrone, he was like, "You realize that if Gabriel and Dresden got back together, it would be the biggest thing in dance music." And we were like, you know, we were just trying to like be cool with each other, you know, like, but it was nice to hear that. And we ended up signing with Armada. They're really good. They're very smart. I don't even know how they knew that. Like, maybe I posted something on Facebook or something that I was going over to Amsterdam. I don't know. I don't remember how they found out, but we signed with Armada. It didn't really work out because the industry was rapidly changing at that time, you know, and like music was just getting like more big room and like less on the trance tip, and definitely not the kind of the brand of music that we make. And so that ran its course, and we felt really jaded about the music industry. And so we stopped making music altogether for like a year or two. Just, it wasn't fulfilling. And we just weren't feeling it. But about a year before The Only Road, we started making music again, but never finishing anything. And so I was like, how do I get this spark back between us? You know, like, what is it going to take? You know, do I need to do more research? Do I need to give him back massages? Do I need to go to a better dispensary? What do we need? And so it was a mutual friend who called him and invited him to his house in France. And while he was there, he was like, "Dude, don't you see it? What's happening? Your music is coming back. Your style of music is coming back, and you guys could be the guys. Like, if you guys went and made trance again, you guys could be the guys." And so Josh calls me up at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like, you know, like 3 a.m. there, or whatever. And he's like, "All right, I got it. We're gonna make a trance album. We're gonna do it." And because for years I had been like, you know, there's always Kickstarter. Because we were always like, we can't afford to make an album. That takes too much money, and time. It's time, and you take less gigs, so that you can focus on the music more. And so, and he's like, and you know what we're going to do? We're going to do that Kickstarter. And I was like, all right. Mm-hmm. And like, we did it. We did it.
I donated.
Yes.
We backed you on both albums.
Thank you. well, we did that. And like, so like when that album came out, it was like all that shit that I personally had to go through to get there. It was so sweet to just even have that out there. Oh, also, I was while that album was being made, I was going through a divorce.
Okay.
I call it the divorce album. In my.
It seems like everybody has one, but uh-huh. Yeah.
So, like, yeah, so getting nominated for a Grammy for a song that was on that album was very meaningful to me because it was, like, the 10-year journey to get there was worth it to make music that had meaning like that.
Right, and it was impactful.
Uh-huh.
Awesome.
And, like, the whole thing was just so organic. Like, we had a laundry list of vocalists we wanted to work with, but nobody was available like until May, and we were like, no, we're gonna be finished by May. And like, so like, we always had in the back burner Subteel singing.
Mm-hmm.
Subteel is Josh's partner,
right?
And I've watched her grow from somebody who could sing to somebody who can really sing. And like, I said to Josh, because he been like, you know, what about Brit? You want to get Brit on? I was like, eh, I don't know if she's ready yet. Because we actually made a song with her in 2011.
Okay.
It was on our album called Mix for Feet. And it was the most ignored song I've ever seen of ours. Like, but it wasn't a single, it was on a mixed compilation.
Okay.
But her voice was just different than what anybody was used to. But she like worked on it over these years, and so when I had heard I had heard her singing I'm Not Like Everybody Else, like when I was just over at Josh's apartment working with him, and that's when I was like, yo dude, I think she might be like, we should work with her, she's really good. Like, and so it was it had a lot more meaning to have it be somebody who is in our circle on the vocals.
That's awesome. Uh-huh. Well, to wrap up,
okay.
You mentioned working on music. So, you guys think in the next few months you'll be dropping any new singles?
Or? Yes, I do. In fact, I know there'll be a new single. I don't know what the date is yet, but it's a banger.
I can't wait.
It's a really good track. And, I've been playing it like.
As an ID in your sets?
Yes, as an ID in the sets. And it just goes over every time. And people are like, you know, like the DMing and like, what's this song? You know, like, oh, that's an ID.
Right.
So, and that's like, you know, to me, that's like how you know something is good. Is when people like.
Want to know what it is.
You want to know what it is before it's even out.
Cool. So, for those listening to this eventually, make sure you're following all the socials for Game and Josh, personal and as a group.
Right.
And I want to thank you for doing this.
Of course. I'm glad we finally got to do it.
After all these years.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.